Kaibu would like to say thank you to our community partners that are feeding our volunteers today. Breakfast is from Kramer Bakery at 2728 Southeast Ankeny, serving morning pastries, coffee, teas, cakes, sandwiches, and soups. Lunch is from Bridges Cafe and Catering at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, committed to using local and organic ingredients. Breakfast served all day and lunch on weekdays. Dinner is from Marrakesh at 1201 Northwest 21st Avenue, open daily 5 to 10 p.m. with belly dancing Wednesday through Sunday, serving Moroccan cuisine since 1989.
This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
Prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. And the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are changing. Senators and congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorways, don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing.
And good morning. You are listening to KABU Community Radio. That particular verse, "Come Senators, Congressmen, please heed the call," would be appropriate to introduce our guest this morning, Mr. Ralph Nader, on the phone from Washington, D.C. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning to your listeners.
How are you this morning?
Fine. It's a beautiful day here.
Good, good. And so I copied off your Wikipedia entry and could do an extensive introduction. And we will talk some about your past, because some people might not know a number of the facets of your very long, decades-long career in public activism. So maybe I was just going to ask you, how do you prefer to be known? What do you prefer to be known for?
As a builder of a more democratic society, like we all should be involved in one degree or another, local, state, national, or international.
And I noticed, I wanted to say I actually kind of got my start in activism working for one of your groups back in, I can't remember which year it was, 82 or 83, I believe, with the Clean Water Action Project in D.C. And unfortunately, it was like record-breaking. It was like 100-degree, a week of 100-degree heat. So it didn't bode well for my future as a canvasser. But
but you learned a lot of stamina being a canvasser, knocking on doors and being resilient when you get people who say no and slam the door, and then you keep going and keep going. So it's good training to be a persistent citizen.
Yeah, well, maybe it wasn't my finest hour in terms of persistence, but I did, one thing I did learn is that, it was shocking to me at the time. I was like a kind of innocent suburban kid from Chevy Chase, is where I grew up, the neighborhoods, the more, working class, less affluent neighborhoods were the ones who actually gave more frequently. Is that something you've noticed over the years?
Yeah, it is amazing. And the polls always show that the lower income Americans give a higher percent of their income to charitable activities than the rich Americans. We're talking percent of income. They're more generous, even though they can afford it less.
So that was just one of your groups. I'm just going to briefly read off because it really gives a sense of your commitment and, you know, the persistence, but not that of the groups that you've started: Citizen Advocacy Center, Citizens Utility Boards, Congress Accountability Project, Consumer Task Force for Automotive Issues, Corporate Accountability Research Project, Equal Justice Foundation, Georgia Legal Watch, National Coalition for Universities in the Public Interest, Pension Rights Center, Center for the Study of Responsive Law, Public Interest Research Groups, and on and on and on. It goes for a full page, a double column on that. And
including Osberg, the first Berg in America, started in Oregon.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that. And still going.
Yes. It's still going, Osberg.
And so, yeah, you know, you've spent a lifetime, you know, engaging with the system, trying to make it work and work better for the people. And that's kind of the spirit in which you wrote this new book. And you've also got a very long list of books that you've authored over the years that I can read some of. But this new book is called Return to Sender, Unanswered Letters to the President 2001 to 2015. And so before we start taking calls, and I know you're not going to be able to be here for the full show, so we're not going to be able to take that many calls. Let people know what your goal was with writing these letters to begin with and with publishing this book.
Well, first of all, I grew up, and when I was a youngster, I read the Adams-Jefferson exchange of letters, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson. And later on, I read the Holmes Lasky letters. That was Supreme Court Justice Holmes and Harold Lasky, a political scholar from England, and I was enthralled by correspondence, by letters going back and forth. And in putting this book together, I wanted to raise a larger issue than all the letters I wrote to President Bush and President Obama, which they never even acknowledged, much less replied to through their staff or agencies or departments. The larger issue I want this book to raise is that a correspondence of a citizen to an elected official, a member of Congress, state legislature, mayor, president, is the most democratic media you can imagine, Paul, because when that letter is written and sent, that letter is not censored, it is not distorted, it's the voice of the person, the voice of the citizen, and it should be respected. And instead, increasingly, fewer and fewer members of Congress, and certainly the presidents of recent decades, don't even bother acknowledging. I'm not talking about someone who writes the senator and says, can you help me recover my lost Social Security check? I'm talking about people who write proposals, ideas. They tell presidents what's going on in the country that they don't know about. They tell the president what may be going on inside the federal bureaucracy they don't know about. They raise their expectation level about what presidents should do and not do. This is a priceless media, and it's being degraded, disrespected, and ignored. And the whole point of the book, Return to Sender, and it's full of all kinds of letters on all kinds of topics of concern to Americans, is to encourage people to keep writing and keep insisting that these letters be acknowledged and responded to. And of course, once you write a letter to an elected representative, you can send it around, send copies around. So even if it goes into a dark hole in the senator's office or in the White House, other people and members of the press benefit from it.
So this particular book, the particular collection of letters, 2001 to 2015, obviously covers just two presidents. I presume this isn't a habit you began later in your life, that this is something you've been doing for quite a while. So you're saying that things have changed, so you must be saying that from personal experience in terms of corresponding with previous presidents, other public officials.
Yeah, that's a good point. I used to write letters and send the letters to the press that I would send, say, to a chairman, Magnuson, Warren Magnuson, senator from Washington State, who was the chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, and I'd ask for a hearing on a particular pattern of consumer abuse. And the Washington Post or New York Times would print the news of the letter. And of course, when senators see that in the major papers, they tend to be more willing to do the right thing and to hold a hearing or act in some way in their senatorial capacity to address the abuse of consumers. Now the press could care less. I would send some of these letters to the White House press corps, which has a lot of time on their hands, Paul, because you know they're always waiting around for something to happen before they go on Air Force One or whatever with the president. And they have plenty of time, but they have no interest whatsoever in citizens voicing legitimate proposals or grievances. And, you know, we don't expect every letter to be in the newspaper, but it's like a blackout. And that's another reason I wrote this book, because I want to turn it into an issue that correspondence should be respected. Now, I wrote two critical letters to the Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, who's a very right-wing corporate-type prime minister, unlike many of his predecessors in Canada. And even though they were critical letters, I got back a formal acknowledgement by the Chief of Correspondence, so the Prime Minister, said they absorbed the message and they referred it to the respective ministry. Well, I mean, that's the way the President of the United States should behave. But you don't even get an acknowledgement. And of course, only about 10% of the American people have ever written to a president in their lives. And fewer are going to write when they realize that they don't even know if it's getting through. They don't even get an acknowledgement, even though the president doesn't have to use a stamp. The president, like members of Congress, has the franking privilege. In Canada, by the way, the citizens also have the franking privilege. That is, if they write to their member of parliament, they don't have to put a stamp on it. In the United States, only the members of the Congress have the franking privilege, but not the citizens who write back to them.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously, you're someone who has been actively engaged in participating and encouraging others to all levels of the political system, from school boards on up. So obviously you're not just focusing on writing to presidents. Obviously, in some ways, writing letters to more local officials can have even more of an impact, I would think.
Yes, good point. I mean, the point I want to make is as broad as you described it. In other words, when a citizen writes a letter, it commits the citizen. The citizen becomes more interested in civic affairs, in participating in the political and electoral policymaking, what have you, process. And so it's a motivating thing, too. When you look at letters to the editors that are printed in newspapers, you can bet your bottom dollar that that person is an unusual person among their peers. That person goes beyond just grumbling or complaining, which are important, and puts it on paper and sends it to a newspaper. That person is much more committed to pursuing the subject of that letter. So we're looking for all kinds of things that can self-motivate citizens, and the way to do it is to ask yourself, what can I do to start a process in motion to improve our neighborhood or our country or our society that no one can stop us from doing, and no one can stop you from writing a letter? So that's where you start. Before you start saying, oh, look at all the odds against anything changing, look at the power structure, and then you tend to make excuses for doing nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, here I'd like to talk briefly at some point in this conversation before you have to leave about a couple local issues, and I'd also like to talk about broader U.S. political issues, specifically the presidential race, especially since you yourself had been a presidential candidate several times. Specifically in terms of, you know, not giving up, there's a proposal for a propane export terminal here in Portland that is not completely, you know, off as a proposal, because the company Pembina and the Port of Portland are probably going to try to go through with it. But due to citizen pressure, It looks like it's not actually going to be on the city council agenda anymore, like it was scheduled to be. And so, you know, this kind of thing happens all the time, all across the country when citizens stand up. And another issue I wanted to briefly touch on is an issue that's going to go before the Portland City Council today. You know, getting back to talking about Clean Water Action Project and water issues, I'm sure you're familiar with the issue of reservoirs that are an EPA regulation mandated that all reservoirs have to be covered now. So there's this process of destroying historic reservoirs at systems that function quite well. I don't know if you felt familiar with that in Portland, and the city council is supposed to decide today on the demolition of the historic Washington Park Reservoir this afternoon at 2 p.m. with no public input. I was wondering if you just wanted to give some people, there's a call to have a presence in protest there. I wonder if you had any comments on that.
Well, I don't usually comment on things I don't know anything about, okay, except proper procedure. And regardless of what your position is on the reservoir issue, if there is no public hearing, that is suspect number one. The city council always has an obligation, even if they're not required to by statute or ordinance, to have public input. Otherwise, they operate as a unilateral dictatorial authority on this issue or that issue. I mean, fortunately, you have a very good law firm in Portland, Kafuri and McDougall, that takes very hard cases. And if we had a law firm like that in every city in America, we'd have a different country. Try to find, those of you who have these causes, try to find good lawyers who don't gouge you, good lawyers who take cases on contingency, because you need a lawyer, as well as protests and street demonstrations.
And, of course, you yourself started out as a practicing attorney, and as a professor, law professor, at the University of Hartford, and then at American University, I wanted to. There's a number of other topics to get to. I know you're only have 15, 20, 25 minutes left, but we are also in our membership drive. This is a time when we're asking people to support this station and the kind of programming you get where you hear the voice of someone like Ralph Nader directly from Washington, D.C., taking time out of his no doubt very busy schedule. And we have one of our co-station managers, I believe, talking to us in the other room, Mike Crenshaw. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Paul. It's good to hear you this morning on Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. Good to hear Ralph Nader talking directly to you. And where else are we going to be able to experience this conversation than KABU right here, right now on 90.7 FM. You can be part of KABU. You can be a member. I know you're listening right now, and some of you listening, many thousands of you, have not yet become members. I want to invite you. I want to encourage you to pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU today, because it takes your contribution, your pledge, whether that's a one-time gift, a one-time donation of a lump sum of money, or a continuous ongoing electronic funds transfer that can sustain us throughout the year, month by month. It takes the money that you provide to keep KABU on the air, bringing you news and public affairs like this candid conversation with Ralph Nader between Paul Rowland and Ralph Nader. And for a $75 minimum pledge, you're going to be able to get this book, Return to Sender, Unanswered Letters to the President from 2001 to 2015, written by Ralph Nader. I'm sure a lot of these letters that were written say and express things that you, the listener, might be thinking on a day-to-day basis. Where's the accountability to the people? Where's the accountability to the public, to the citizens, to the normal people, to the everyday folks like you and I, when it comes to elected officials in Washington, D.C., when it comes to this hierarchy that seems more and more to be out of touch with reality and beholden to the corporate interests of the super wealthy? That's what we call a plutocracy, right, Paul?
I think Ralph Nader would have a lot to say about that.
Yes, I do want to urge people to contribute to KABU. KBOO has a record. They're too modest. They could have a list a mile long about important events in Portland that you heard first about on KBOO radio. Important protests, important forthcoming dissent, which is the mother of all assent. Dissent, we should remember, in our American history, is the mother of assent. For example, dissent during the colonial period against King George was turned into the Bill of Rights, which I assume is assented to by most people today. And I'm proud to say that my book, Return to Sender, which is just out, is a KBOO-type book. And so I hope you all try to contribute now. Just think of the people who started KBOO many years ago. They sacrificed their time. They were told by people, you'll never do it. You can never have this kind of nonprofit radio on the public airways. And they proved the cynics wrong. And just in terms of their memory, it seems we should all gather together and support these kinds of community radio stations, public radio stations around the country.
Indeed. And the number, one more time, is 877-500-5266. And among other thank you gifts, you can get a copy of Ralph Nader's new book that we're talking about here this morning. And we have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to one of those callers. BJ, you're on the air.
Yes, dissent is part of it. That's what we have to have. Mr. Ralph, if we don't have it, we lose our plutocracy. I'm an older person, and I've watched this country change. I put signs on the front lawns for you down in San Diego. My sister is a very good friend of yours. She's still alive. I'm barely alive now because of coughing. So I just like to say PTT has to be stopped. They'll try to raise it again. There's no transparency there. We have to be able to read what they say. We can't have corporations suing us because we don't believe. Okay?
Okay, thank you for calling.
Very well put. Very well put. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is another corporate coup d'etat subordinating our environment, labor, and consumer standards to the imperatives of international commercial corporate trade, and doing it in a very secretive manner. For example, President Obama wants to get this through Congress, and as Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, has said in recent days, why don't you give us a copy of the agreement? Why don't you let the American people get copies of the agreement before you try to ram it through Congress on a fast-track autocratic procedure where senators and representatives can't even amend it? And Senator Ron Wyden, your senator, went along with President Obama, and he's supporting a fast-track procedure through Congress of this multi-hundred-page agreement, trade agreement with 11 other countries on the Pacific Rim, without allowing any senator or representative to amend it, and the debate is very limited in time.
But
Why are we giving up our sovereignty? Why are we allowing a pull-down trade agreement down to lower labor and democratic processes in these countries, many of which are fascist and communist-type regimes? Why are we allowing this? And why is Ron Wyden, the senator from Oregon, leading the pack? And I think the caller reflects on what's happening to our country over time, and he reflects the importance of you going to tradewatch.org to get the details, tradewatch.org, or you can go to citizen.org. You'll get a lot of details, a lot of materials that you can use back home in the coming fight, first against Fast Track, which will probably reach the Congress and the House of Representatives next month in June. That opens it up for the agreement to be sent in the fall under a no amendment procedure. And they try to use complexity, they try to use secrecy to bamboozle the American public, but a majority of the American people have endured the results of NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, and they don't want any part of it. So go to tradewatch.org, and I'm sure that KBOO Radio will keep you up on things that are going on in this area.
Indeed, we've been covering that issue quite a lot. I got a personal letter, speaking of letters, from Ron Wyden. I'm kind of joking, personal letter, but saying that he voted against the fast track when he, you know, because he was asking for some kind of accountability procedures. I didn't get the full gist of it, but when he found out that the Republicans weren't going to go along with that, well, his conscience sparked him to vote against the agreement. I'm sure you know about what I'm talking about.
Yes. Well, he's under a lot of pressure from folks in Oregon who are properly putting a lot of pressure on him. And he is often too wishy-washy. You don't know where he stands. And I'm sure he said he cut the deal with the Republican majority leader, Senator McConnell, in return for some improvements. But now he knows he's being betrayed, as he should have known a long time ago. So keep the heat on. No fast track, no Trans-Pacific agreement. If they block fast track and they open up the Congress to amendments and extended debate, there will be no fast track pushed through for the Trans-Pacific Agreement. We're talking about huge number of jobs. We're talking about hollowed out communities. We're talking about pressure to weaken or not increase the protections for environment, consumer, price of medicines. This gives a huge more power to the pharmaceutical industry, intellectual property rights, otherwise known as patent monopolies. It's bad in so many ways. And you might say, why is Obama supporting something that's bad for America? Because the big U.S. corporations who are pushing this want to shove more investment and trade into poorer countries run by dictatorial forces that they can bribe. They can gouge workers $1.50 a day in Vietnam, building shoes. All that stuff means that our giant corporations that rose to power on the profit on the back of American corporations, and when they got in trouble, they were bailed out in Washington by American taxpayers. And when they got in trouble abroad over the years, they were saved by the U.S. Marines. And what's their response to America? Is it gratitude? No. It's we're out of here with your jobs and industries to fascist and communist regimes abroad. That's why this trade agreement is being pushed, because these big corporations born in the U.S. have no loyalty to the United States, no patriotism. We should raise the issue. Why are these corporations not patriots? Why?
Well, but
why
he
don't
was...
we hold them to the standards we hold all Americans?
Well, Obama
the
was just...
standards of authentic patriotism.
Well, Obama was just out here, and, you know, he met with Phil Knight and Nike, and, you know, he was... they were all very chummy. I mean, you know, isn't Nike good for Oregon and the country?
Imagine the arrogance. He goes to the one company that symbolizes the export of entire industry, shoe manufacturing, to South Korea first, and then to Indonesia, lower wages, and then to Vietnam, lower wages. Phil Knight is now a multi-billionaire on the backs of millions of poor workers who can't even get a living wage in those countries, can't even get decent working conditions, although he claims he's trying to improve the working conditions. But Phil Knight's middle initial should be P, promise, like he promised President Obama when he visited him last week that he was going to create 10,000 U.S. jobs. Oh, really? Would he post a bond on that? He's got over a million workers in East Asia working in horrible conditions under local managers who know how to avoid even whatever minimum labor standards there are in those countries. So President Obama really, he's off the screen in how he attacks his own Democrats who are vainly trying to protect what's left of the manufacturing labor base in our country.
Well, you know, we have to take a break again really briefly here. And there's something I'm not sure we're going to get to. I kind of wanted to ask you, well, you know, these letters you wrote, I mean, to some extent, a lot of them have to do with like trying to hold them to their campaign promises. Your goal seemed to be, you know, basically just to sort of, I don't know, prick their conscience. Just, you know, I guess maybe it was based upon earlier experiences where actually were able to get through more, you know, through that the yes. bubble that they're surrounded with. But it, I mean, to some extent, it just seems like it's almost wasted effort at this point.
Nothing is wasted that should be done. It's what Martin Luther King once said. If it's the right thing to do, it's always the right time to do it. And sometimes you have to show a pattern of rejection in order to alert people to say, yeah, this is not fair. If I want to write a letter to my president, I ought to at least get an acknowledgement. Of course, you do get an acknowledgement if you invite the president to your child's high school graduation. They have these form letters saying, thank you very much, you're very gracious, but he's otherwise preoccupied. They will write to answers to letters they want to use as political props. They'll write responses to campaign contributors. And in high-profile issues like the GM bailout, they have form letters that they will write. But if you write a non-form letter type letter expressing some opinion, proposal, idea, good luck. You're not going to get an acknowledgement. Even though they have whole dozens of volunteers who go to the White House every day and dutifully and generously process the mail and categorize it, that doesn't lead the White House to have a correspondence policy of response. And I wrote a letter to both Bush and Obama saying, you haven't been replying or even acknowledging my letters. What is your correspondence policy? What's your policy toward answering correspondence? Never got an answer.
Predictable. So, Ralph, it's so good to talk to you. I know you're going to have to go briefly. We're going to briefly take another break. Let listeners know once again that this is your time to engage with us. This is also a form of citizen activism in some sense. This is your getting active in terms of supporting a station that we hope represents or expresses your some of your, at least, convictions and beliefs, and hopefully we do a good job of it. And Mike, give us some more reasons why people should call that number, 877-500-5266.
To quote Ralph Nader, who I think quoted Martin Luther King Jr., what did he say? If it's the right thing to do, it's always the right time to do it. That's kind of hopeful, because it means you're not really running out of time, but now is the time. So give us a call. Now is the time to do it. Take advantage of the present moment. Don't sit going in circles in your head. Be like, man, I'm going to do it. I'm going to pick up my phone and dial 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266 is how you can become a member of KABU. Today, it's our spring membership drive, and Wednesday morning talk radio, we've got Paul Rowland, we've got Ralph Nader live, and this is unique. This is the type of experience that you're going to find on KABU 90.7 FM, because we are here by the people, for the people, news from the people. You can be part of that process. You can become a volunteer, and you can become a member, and we want you to do that, because it takes a lot of us to keep KABU doing what we do, which is to bring you news and public affairs 5 days a week, to bring you music 7 days a week, 365 days a year for close to 48 years now. And we're going to continue doing this with your support. You can give a monthly donation. We'll take it from your bank account, your credit card, or your debit card through electronic funds transfer. And there's a volunteer waiting to answer the phone right now when you dial 877-500-5266 for a $75 minimum pledge. You're going to get Ralph Nader's book, Return to Sender, Unanswered Letters to the President. And, you know, this question that keeps coming up around, where is the accountability? There doesn't seem to be much, and it's our job and our responsibility to hold those folks in power accountable, but it's also our job and our responsibility to create alternate systems of power that they actually have no control over, that are there to empower us to do what we need to do on a day-to-day basis in life. 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Mike. And we've got a caller waiting. How much, Ralph, how much more time do you have? About 10 minutes, is that right?
No, I just have, if we take another call. I just want to add to what was just said, is it's a lot easier than we think, American people, to turn this country around. If you look at the history of America, as long as it reflected the public sentiment, less than 1% of the people connecting with one another around the country can turn the country around on one issue after another. That was true in the 19th century for farmer labor rights. It was true for women's suffrage. And apart from the Civil War, it was true for abolition of slavery. There never was more than less than 1% organized and committed and connected to one another. As long as what they did represented what Abraham Lincoln once said was the, quote, public sentiment, end quote. He said, with the public sentiment, you can do anything, and without it, it's hard to do much of anything. And we have a huge public sentiment in this country, including left-right support for a higher minimum wage, for full Medicare for all, everybody in, nobody out, free choice of doctor and hospital. We have a huge public sentiment to break up the big New York banks that are too big to fail, to prefer Main Street over Wall Street, to reform the Patriot Act's restrictions on civil liberties, to get rid of corporate welfare, which the right wing calls crony capitalism, to do something about prison reform and juvenile justice. That's a right left there. So take heart. It isn't an overwhelmingly difficult. As long as less than 1% of the people organized in every congressional district, for example, to focus on your senators and representatives, if you represent majority opinion, that's an unstoppable movement, which was the title of my recent book, Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And KBOO Radio is your radio station. It's not their radio station, like most commercial radio stations who use our public airways, which we own, and tend to abuse it, with 80-90% being entertainment or advertisements. KBOO Radio is your radio station, and you can pay tribute to the memory of those Oregonians who started it 48 years ago, and wherever they are now, if they're still around or in the heavens, they would be very pleased to see that the next generation of Oregonians are going to keep this station prosperous, even though they use their money very frugally, and giving you the news you need to know quickly.
Thank you so much for that, Ralph, and I hope people take that to heart. Let's go to one caller. Paul, you're on the air.
Thanks, Mr. Rowland. Thanks, Mr. Nader. I appreciate the show. I just wanted to make a couple thoughts here. Basically, regarding the water situation quickly, it seems like it's a real dumb idea, right, to go ahead and bury the water like they're proposing to do. But it seems like between all the, you know, the FEMA camp activity and all the, you know, secret underground bases all around the country, it seems like they're planning for something big, and I wouldn't put it past them to be looking ahead, potentially burying the water for their own safety, you know, for good drinking water in case of some kind of explosion or something in the future. But regarding this TTP thing, it's really unfortunate what's going to be going on here if this thing passes. You guys both know what's going on, and it seems like, you know, there's a lot of unjust activity going on between police and people of color in this country. And I just find it interesting that they're basically putting it out in the media like they never do, you know. And it seems like they're doing it to basically put the people against the cops and the cops against the people. So in the future, when we are protesting TTP, it'll be easier for the cops to go through that, that process of stopping people in the streets and using their militarized weaponry and all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to Mr. Nader, if there's anything we could do that would be safe for the average citizen who does want to go out and protest.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I don't know anything at all about the first problem, but on the police problem, look, we know what the solutions are. First of all, you have employment and a living wage in these poor areas. Nothing produces the kind of street crime more than our failed policy called the drug war, which left-right believe now should be changed. And second, massive unemployment, impoverished conditions, poor housing, poor municipal services, not enough community banking, etc., leads to this kind of situation. And we know what the reforms are. Number one, community policing. When the police live in your community, they know people, people know them. It's quite different if they come in from the suburbs or other parts of the city. Community policing has worked wherever it's been tried. Number two, independent civilian review boards. Just like we have civilian leadership of military in our Constitution, we need an independent civilian review board over police misconduct. And number three, and this is the most important thing, you don't see these problems in middle-class, upper-middle-class communities in the cities. I wonder why. I mean, for heaven's sake, don't we know that destitution, hopelessness, unemployment, the boomeranging war on drugs, inadequate health facilities, housing like hovels, inadequate public transit even to get to work without spending 3 hours one way going into the suburbs as they do now in Washington and elsewhere. We know credit unions, there should be no food deserts, there should be food stores that are other than 7-Eleven chocolate factories and salt factories and fat factories. We know what it is. Instead, we're spending hundreds of billions of dollars blowing up places all over the world that are increasing hatred and violence against the U.S. in the so-called war on terror. But that's big business, isn't it? The war on terror, it feeds the military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower so presciently warned about in his farewell address in 1960, which you can read online. That's what we got to do, and less than 1% of the people can do this, because the majority of the people support what that less than 1% can do. And when you're talking about less than 1 out of every 100 Americans can turn this country around, reflecting majority opinion, how can you possibly be discouraged? How can you not want to learn civic skills? How can you not want to listen to KBOO radio and see what's going on in Portland that you'll never hear about on a commercial radio in Portland?
Indeed. So, Ralph, I just wanted to get a sort of a check on your time availability, because we're scheduled to go to another break. And if you had to leave, we'd just say goodbye now. But if you're able to stick around longer, we'd continue the conversation.
Unfortunately, Paul, I'm not because I have another appointment.
Okay.
But I just want to urge once more during fundraising month, which is usually May, isn't it?
Yep. Well, it's a fundraising 10 days, actually, this time around.
10 days. Just 10 days. To make your appreciation, to make your contribution, to make your participation in KBOO Radio possible, send them a contribution. Send them an idea of what you think should be covered in the greater Portland area, for example. They're looking for it. You could be their sort of ad hoc reporters.
Indeed.
Thank you
we
very
have a,
much, Paul.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ralph Nader. Really appreciate that.
Yes. Good luck.
Okay. And we'll talk to you again, I'm sure. And that was Ralph Nader. Apologize to the one person who's been waiting. I knew we'd have to kind of limit our calls between a membership drive and his limited availability. And we are in our membership drive. And Mike Crenshaw is with us to talk to you some more about why you should call that number.
You need to call the number because we are community radio. We are here for you. And without you, we wouldn't be here. So this kind of reciprocity that happens between KBOO and the listener. That's right. I'm talking to you, the person listening to KBOO right now. Whether you're listening on your mobile device, on your radio, in the car, at the house, on the way to work, at the office, on your computer at KBOO.FM, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that we're here, and we're here because of you. So you can become a member by contributing to KBOO in helping support, keep us on the air, helping support our 8 full-time employees, our 500-plus volunteers. You can become one of our close to 5,000 members We've got 45,000 listeners, and you can support the radio that we're providing by dialing 877-500-5266. I want to say thank you to our volunteers that are in the building and that help us by answering the phone and talking to you. You can meet one of the wonderful volunteers when you call 877-500-5266 and make a pledge today. Become a member of KBOO Community Radio. And if you're online, you can go to kboo.fm. We'll be streaming there from the website, and you can click on donate and you can become a member that way. And if you're in the hood, if you're in the area, then you can stop by 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, right off of 8th and Burnside. KBOO's been here for 47, going on 48 years. And I've been coming down to KBOO for about 22, 23 years. And when I first got to Portland, it was immediately apparent that KBOO was a place for me to plug in with people who I never met, but I knew were my kind of people. I've been an independent hip hop artist for as long as I've been in Portland, and KBOO's always been a place for me to share my art, share my music, and also to share my activism in the community as well. So I consider KBOO to be a community resource, and I hope you do too. And we need to invest in KBOO and keep KBOO around. Did you want to say anything?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, consider it calling now also as a support, not just for this program, but I do hope you appreciate and support this program in particular, but, you know, all of the talk radio programs and all of the morning public affairs and evening public affairs is in specific. You know, I had Chris Hedges on last week. I've taken on the Pembina propane export terminal issue, and I consider that I did my little part, and KBOO did its little part in bringing to light some important aspects of that issue that wouldn't otherwise have been brought up, and maybe did something to actually affect that decision, as we've done in many other cases. So if you believe that we can actually have an impact, that change is actually possible, and you can only come to the conclusion that KBOO is a part of that change. So support that change by calling 877-500-5266 and get a copy of this book. I've been reading through. We didn't get a chance to really get a feel for, you know, what's in the letters. But, he has a very dry wit. They're very amusing. Also very, very kind of tragic in a way, because you see all these missed opportunities and all these reminders of the campaign promises that were broken. So anyway, get a copy of the book. Call us up now, 877-500-5266.
That's right. Or go online, kboo.fm. Again, that book, Return to Sender, Unanswered Letters to the President, 2001 to 2015. What would you say to the president if you had the opportunity to do so? More importantly, what would you say to the people that actually tell the president what to do? And then at the end of the day, you might just go, you know, I don't really want to deal with those guys because they're not answering their phone. They're not accountable. They're not trying to be available. So what can I do? I can put my energy, I can put my time, my resources, and my thoughts towards something that I actually can have influence over. It's something that not only do I exert my influence upon, but there's a benefit for me in my participation in this kind of participatory democracy that is available to you because you have access to it. And that's KBOO Community Radio. 877-500-5266 is the number to call to become a member today. If you're not a member, become a member. If you're a former member or a longtime member, renew your membership, and maybe even buy a gift for somebody. You know, somebody whose birthday is coming up, get a membership in their name. Can you do that? I think you can. I think that's legal. And let everybody know. Get on social media. Tell people about the drive. Go to KBOO Community Radio. I had our Facebook URL around here somewhere, but I don't see it right now. So I'm not going to quote that.
If you're on Facebook, just put in KBOO Community Radio.
You'll find it there. Yeah. 877-500-5266. What were you going to say, Paul?
Oh, I was going to say that no time like the present. And if you want to get Ralph Nader back on the air. I bet we could do that if you want to get Chris Hedges back on the air. We bring, you know, people are coming through town. We try to get them on online. We try to, people who've written books recently. We've had featured Chris Hedges' book last week. A lot of people are really interested in that. We're featuring Ralph Nader's book this week. Authors who are coming into town, activists on crucial issues. So I guess I'm just going to, by saying that, morph back into my program, which, you know, there really is no distinction between the program and the need to support the program. But we, I don't know, I guess if we still have that caller, Steve, on who's been, oh, he left. I'm so sorry. I just want to apologize to not only that caller, but other callers who had hoped to talk to Ralph Nader, you know, between a shortened time because of membership drive and shortened time because he had to leave a little early. We weren't able to get too many of your callers, but you can call now. And the number is 503-231-8187. And we have Mike on the line. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
Say, you were talking about all these bills, not people not seeing them and how big they are. What about the Affordable Care Act?
What about
it? What are your thoughts about that? It was a huge bill, and I doubt if one congressman ever read it.
I personally can't speak to that because I'm not in touch with the Congress people, so I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, I would guess that they... I know
well, nobody we're speculating.
Read it.
Well, you say
in fact, Nancy Pelosi said, let's pass it, then we'll find out what's in it.
Okay.
Isn't that pretty much the same thing?
Well, I mean...
That's what you're talking about?
As the TPP? Well, I mean, they're very different bills. I mean, one can discuss them on the merits. I mean,
but they're being passed in the same ways. It's like...
Well, I don't think there was fast track. I don't think there was fast. I don't think there was fast track for the Affordable Care Act, actually.
But it's the same. It's such a huge bill. The congressman, name one congressman that read it before they passed it.
I can't possibly know how many congressmen.
Yeah. Oh, I understand.
I don't know the Congress people. I don't know if they did. I don't know if they didn't. But you know,
if you want to
get into an argument about the Affordable Care Act, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the Affordable Care Act. I think that it leaves a lot to be desired. I believe, you know, in single payer, you know, for everybody should be guaranteed free medical care. That's what I believe. So no, I don't think the Affordable Care Act was great.
It should be free.
Yeah,
in other words, the doctor should work for free? I don't understand how you make the term free. Somebody has to pay for it.
Well, that's what theoretically taxes go for, you know.
The taxpayers pay for it. That's what you want. What about people that don't pay any tax?
Like the corporate, like a lot of corporations, you mean?
Well, and there's a lot of people that pay no taxes also. In fact, they get more back than what they pay in.
Well, you know, this is a big subject. You know, I'm glad you raised it. I mean, if you're comparing it to the TPP, I don't think those are really comparable because we're one of the main issues with the TPP, and aside from, you know, the bill itself, which is going to grant increased rights and possibly to abuse their privileges to corporations around the world and reduce the sovereignty not just of nations but of communities and the ability of people to actually govern our own lives. But it's also the abuse of the process, the legislative process itself, by fast-tracking it and not only the Affordable Care Act was available online, I believe, to read for the citizenry. I mean, you know,
and how many pages was it?
Well, I mean, sure, these are reasonable issues.
Thousands of pages, which makes, well, that's what I'm saying.
Well,
tell me who read it.
I bet
less than a thousandth of 1% of our population read it.
Well, you know,
on the merits, this is how these things get. This is how these things get through.
Well, on the merits of that, I agree with what you're saying in general about the total separation between, you know, it's kind of becomes its own elite. The elected officials. I don't I don't believe that that process, as we've established it, the, you know, the representative democracy as it's evolved, and especially the massive corporate influence over it, has much functionality. And I do agree that, you know, these massive bills, and you could name all sorts of them, are very problematic. So yes, I mean, some of the points I agree with, you know, whether you know the Affordable Care Act was better than nothing, that's a good issue too. But we have to go to another break. So I appreciate your calling, Mike. Call again, and we're on our membership drive. It's 877-500-5266 is the number to call to express your support for, you know, open conversation to the extent that we're able to in an hour-long program. God, I'd like to have 2 hours. That'd be kind of cool, like Tom Hartman. But anyway, we, you know, this is a really great opportunity. You know, sometimes people, you know, before they go to work, they get a chance to call in. If, you know, you don't go to, if you don't have a job, if you're, hopefully if you're driving, you'll pull over to the side of the road and make your call. You know, we don't want to have any accidents. Well, you know, it'd be hate to hear someone call in and then, you know, hear that they get in an accident. Anyway, so we do have our, this is our time for listeners to call in and engage with us and engage with people like Ralph Nader. And now is your time to call in and engage with our volunteers who are waiting to take your call and your support for the station.
That's right. And today is May 13th, and 30 years ago today, May 13th, 1985, the city of Philadelphia dropped the firebomb on members of the MOVE organization. Six children were killed, and that is an incident of state-sponsored terror that a lot of people have never even heard about. And
not just on MOVE, it burned out how many, like 80 houses?
A whole city block, yeah. Jeez. A whole city block. And we're going to have a special program on that coming up at 9 o'clock. So I want you guys to stay tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM, because it's only here that you're going to get Ralph Nader having a candid conversation with Paul Rowland, and it's only here that you're going to get that 30-year anniversary report on the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia. And these are two very important facets and aspects, features of the world that we live in the United States of America today. And KBOO is all about sharing that reality in a very transparent and informative fashion with you, the listener. And we want your support. We appreciate the support of the people who've kept us going all these years, and we want to invite you that have not become members to become members today by picking up your phone and dialing 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266. Paul was talking about, you know, being safe, pulling over and using the telephone to give us a call. If you have one of these newfangled, fully automated technological wondrous contraptions where you can just be like hands-free, voice activated, you have no excuse. Come on now.
Such things exist?
Oh yeah. Oh, you could, really? Just say, matter of fact, they probably have it. And if I'm talking to you and you know what I'm talking about, I want to hear from you. I want to hear that phone ring. You could probably just say KBOO, you know, very assertively, and what do you know? The phone's going to ring and you're going to become a member today. So it's people like you, forward-thinking people who are thinking about the future, who are responsible and good at what you do. Yeah, we love you here. We want to see you. Drive on down here if you like. Come in the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, KBOO.FM. If you're online, you can go to donate and you can become a member today.
And we've only got a couple minutes left for this particular program. And if you support our programming, my programming, other talk shows in the morning between 8 and 9 in the morning, Monday to Friday, and you probably know who the other hosts are. They bring you, you know, a little bit of a different style, a little bit of a different point of view each day. Keeps the diversity going here at KBOO. Call us up, 877-500-5266, and once again a $75 contribution. And you know, you can increase a previous contribution if you didn't get a thank you gift, and make it up to $75, and you can get a copy of this really fascinating book, Return to Center, Unanswered Letters to the President, 2001-2015, that I was just talking about with our special guest this morning, Ralph Nader. 877-500-5266 866. Give us a call.
That's right. We're waiting. And we'll be here. We'll be here. We might end the drive a little bit. No, we're going to end it right on time. We need your support. 877-500-5266.
All right. And that's another Wednesday morning talk radio for this morning. Thanks so much to Ralph Nader. And thanks to everybody who's called in. If you haven't called in, call in. Let's make it happen, folks. Wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown. Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are changing. Come on, writers and critics, you prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. And the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are changing.
Come senators and KABU would like to say thank you to our community partners that are feeding our volunteers today. Breakfast is from Crema Bakery at 2728 Southeast Ankeny, serving morning pastries, coffee, teas, cakes, sandwiches, and soups. Lunch is from Bridges Cafe and Catering at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, committed to using local and organic ingredients. Breakfast served all day and lunch on weekdays. Dinner is from Marrakesh at 1201 Northwest 21st Avenue, open daily 5 to 10 p.m. with belly dancing Wednesday through Sunday, serving Moroccan cuisine since 1989.